CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Live on a Tuesday morning, CliffCentral.com, coming to you from our various locations around the country. Got the whole team here. It's Sia Sangweni, Umi Mashiko, Bulelo Tinta, me, you, and whoever else you want to invite. I mean, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell everybody. Everybody deserves this. Even the bad people, they deserve this too. God knows where else they're going to learn from, you know?
Maybe especially them. We could rub off on them in a good way.
We could rub off on them in a good way? Yeah. I'm in agreement with Pumi there. All agreed? Raise your hands. That's a resolve. There we go. Excellent. Excellent.
Say aye.
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 Aye. Yes. Yes. All right. Well.
What is that shot of stuff you're drinking so early in the morning,
this
young
is a
parrot?
An espresso, which I think Mbulelo will approve of. It's made of fine beans, which I have then obviously destroyed in a machine and then squeezed into this concoction, which I now drink. I have one coffee a day. I'm going to make sure it's a good one.
And so you should.
Fancy. Absolutely. Very fancy. All right. So we seem to have resolved the technical issues that we were having yesterday. Bulelo found that there was some wire that was just unplugged.
Or just loose.
It was just lying around. You know, I mean, that's just so... This is unfortunately what happens when you leave a place alone. And we haven't... I mean, like, you took over from Fundo in the studio. So, you know, you came in there. And unless there are people around to show you that something is hanging out of a certain machine,
yeah.
How else are you going to figure it out, you know? So,
and it's still funny to me as well. We can send man to space and, you know, we can discover great things in labs, but also at the same time...
We forget one plug.
You know, just one cord gets loose and things are screwed up.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
Well, there's so much to talk about this morning, and I wanted to get stuck into something which has got the whole country talking, because... Mm-hmm. It seems to me to be something that shouldn't be the whole country's issue. Like, really, you know, advertising can obviously be offensive. It can also be very funny. Advertising does not determine whether or not you should behave yourself in a civilized society, though. And the EFF are just looking for any excuse at the moment to be back in people's minds, because they haven't been. Through the whole of the coronavirus pandemic, the EFF have been the most frightened, and they've been quiet and they've been desperate to keep the lockdown going as long as possible. And they really just disappeared off of everyone's radar. I don't think anyone's been thinking about them. I mean, find me 10 things Julius has said over 6 months and you'd struggle. You'd really struggle. So he's got a little bit of struggle envy because he sees what's going on with BLM in America. And he's like, oh, my... You know, my would-be compatriots in America are doing things and getting lots of attention. I'm getting none. Meh. So he struck upon, and Floyd and Buyiseni and the rest of the think tank that we call the EFF, they struck upon this ad from Clix about how there's this black woman with dry and damaged hair, which, by the way, I often feel like I have. And then... You know, one thing, I mean, Pumi, I've said this a million times. I don't get involved in discussions around black women's hair because it is too sensitive a topic. Even black women don't dare to go there sometimes because every person has such strong feelings about it. The relationship between a black woman and her hair is a very personal one. Sometimes it is wrapped up in identity. Sometimes it's wrapped up in how much she loves it and she's proud of her afro, or sometimes she shaves it off. And then that's controversial, or sometimes she's putting a weave on, and that's controversial. And, you know, I've never, ever had to think about my hair as much as a black woman has, because when black women go to the salon, they could spend up to, you know, like 10 hours there, you know, which no man in the world could ever comprehend. So I just stay away from it. And stupid clicks. I mean, really, it is stupid of clicks. I don't know who their ad agency is. I'm sure that they're going to be heads rolling. Well, as much as you can make heads roll in South Africa, because...
Well, there already are heads that have rolled.
Really?
So I didn't even know that I was a valued customer of Clicks until I got an SMS yesterday.
Oh, did they
dear valued customer.
Do they have a database of all black women in South Africa?
Alternatively, they went and bought it very quickly.
No, I think so.
Oh, yeah, someone made some serious money yesterday. So what did they say to you?
With an open letter from the CEO confirming that they've since suspended two people who turn out to be rather junior, because they don't even get a mention as to what their name is or what position they hold.
Well, if they gave the name, then people would victimize them, and we don't want that.
But this is the thing, right? So there was already somebody being completely dragged last night.
Yeah.
And this morning I saw somebody who was a CMO at Clicks like 10 years ago. He was already dragged into the Twitter mess. Dude, that Clicks, hey, EFF, that whole thing is a thorough mess. But it's going to test some people. It's going to put some people to the real test, I think.
How so?
Well, it's already put Peggy Tolle on the... on the line, isn't it? Everyone's Where's Peggy Tolle? Where are the police?
Yeah,
where?
You know, lawlessness. I mean, think
but
about...
But also it's great to test the NPA.
We managed to... Yes, precisely, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, we managed to arrest hundreds of thousands of people for lockdown infringements. And here we've got actual wanton destruction of property and vandalism by a group of people... Who seemingly are not connected to this problem in any real way, other than that they're pretending to stand up for other people. And that always makes me very suspicious.
Who are well and easily identifiable.
Absolutely.
With clear intentions.
No masks, social distancing. I mean, these are the people who are telling us that lockdown was essential. The EFF. But don't you think, like, I'm so tired of a group like the EFF doing damage. You know, there are millions of South Africans, black, white, male, female, who go about their daily business not breaking the law and not destroying other people's property. Sensible, well-intentioned, civilized members of society who, when we get upset, we may write a letter or we call a manager like a car. There are a plethora of remedies available to anyone who's upset by anything, right? I mean, there really are these days. And you've got social media too, which is a great way for anybody, even a nobody, to vent their feelings. And I am by no means saying that there shouldn't be some people who are upset by an ad. You're allowed to be upset by an ad. I do find it kind of silly, but that's just me. That doesn't stop you from being upset, and you're allowed to be by many different mechanisms in society. You are allowed to be as upset as you'd like to. You may be humorless. You may be genuinely offended. It may strike at some chord in you that I don't understand. So you go ahead and be you. None of my business what upsets you and what doesn't. And as I said, this is a particularly sensitive topic, as I have realized over, 22 years of talk radio, and I know that this is one that goes deep for whatever reason, and maybe we'll get into that, maybe we won't. But the idea that the minute people are upset by something, the only way for them to deal with that is to act out like infants and break things and burn things, and that the rest of us give tacit approval to this because we think, oh, well, you know, the EFF, because their anger is so great, they must act more immaturely than the rest of us. I'm absolutely convinced that there are kids who know that this is wrong. Kids who know that this is not the way to behave. I mean, imagine your child goes onto the playground and sets fire to another child's suitcase or kicks that other child in the genitals or does something just because that kid said something they didn't like. You would give them a dressing down. You'd say, listen now. Sit down here. This is how you deal with this stuff as a mature adult. But we seem to have two layers of standards. We have a layer of standards for us, for our children, for our family, for our friends, for the society we want to be a part of. And then we create another layer, And we say, well, you know, if the EFF's anger is justified, then they should be allowed to destroy stuff.
I don't know if anybody says that. Is that what
you mean?
That.
Yeah, is that what you mean by tacit approval?
Well, I see it. I see people making excuses for the EFF's behavior in click stores across the country yesterday, and I see people.
Really?
Yeah, I do. I see them. Maybe it's just my idiot left wing friends on social media, because there are a lot of those. I mean, I do have friends who disagree with me, believe it or not.
No, I saw a lot of people who were crying out about. These protests are all good and well, I say that in inverted commas, but the people who will most be impacted by it are the people who you are claiming to be fighting for, as opposed to hitting the powers that be where it hurts. Well, that's what I was seeing more of, not a problem.
We have laws, and we all we need to do now is, as Pumi says, identify these people and put them in jail or find the organization that created the chaos. For all the property damage, and then we can move on.
So, fascinatingly for me, is almost universally all the stuff that I saw was stuff that was definitely clicks was wrong, the advertising was wrong, and in at the same time, the EFF is wrong for the way that they are going about this thing. So I did not see anybody that kind of was going, well, you know, when can the, not a one, which was for me quite a fascinating thing to watch, because I think up until now, the EFF generally do get kind of some wind in their sails every time they, you know, make this kind of a noise, say something. And I'm fascinated by what in the world could be happening to them to self-implode in such a spectacular manner so soon, so soon before an election. You know, I mean, they did really well in the national election. There's a local election coming up. And now they're just setting themselves on fire, self-immolation.
Well, I mean, do you have any theory around why would something like this trigger them in such a spectacular fashion?
I think it was a miscalculation.
I think they didn't
see how badly this could go for them.
Has it gone bad for them?
Dude, nobody's their friend right now. Everyone's just like, what?
I saw a really awesome response to this. I saw a video of a group of women. I think Tuli Madonsela retweeted it, who were voicing their feelings about their hair, and I think that was terrific, because it was, you know, it was a whole lot of women explaining their stories and talking about their relationship with their hair, which I thought was very powerful stuff. And then I see the EFF, and I'm like, well, the one is a really interesting, thoughtful, quite personal response to this, which kind of explained the situation to those of us who don't understand it. And the other one is just wanton lunacy and destruction and like infantile behavior. And it's very clear which one is which, you know.
If anybody was still doubting it, I think the one thing that this Clicks debacle has done is it's shown Julius and the EFF to be a one-trick pony.
Mm.
They can only do one thing.
Yeah. But there are people who – this is a party that's – gathered an enormous amount of momentum in a very short time. I mean, remember, 6.5 years ago, they didn't exist. And they've gone in the polls from single-digit to double-digit figures. And they looked poised to reap even more votes in the next election because of dissatisfaction with the ANC and with maybe with the DA and maybe with some of the other left-wing parties. But now it seems, as Pumi says, that they've just lost their way, and now they've started to believe any attention is good attention, and I feel, Pumi, like they're also feeling a little bit left out. Like there's a big part of that. Like I really think there's a big part of that.
Problem.
Yeah, they're feeling very left out. They're feeling like nobody loves us. No one's paying attention to us. We also want some riots like they have in you know the US, and now we're going to show people how we can be like them. We're going to play act. Like we're our friends from the BLM movement in America.
Yeah, well, this is just my basic perspective on it. From the posts that I've seen, there have been some people who are in total support of the EFF and the protests. And Gareth, you think it might just be mere inspiration for the Black Lives Matter movement. But if you look at Floyd's t-shirt on the left-hand side, it had the EFF logo. On the right-hand side, it literally wrote Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, you see. So yeah. And they also tried this when George Floyd was killed. They also jumped on that bandwagon. So I feel like a little bit of it is envy that they're not getting the attention that they feel they're entitled to. But it's
okay,
amazing.
Okay, so we've given them enough attention.
I think so.
Moving right along.
But what would you – I mean, you've been in advertising for years. So ad agencies, you remember they made that mistake with H&M where it turned out to be a stock image or something, and they had a little black kid wearing a shirt that said something about monkey, and it got people very upset. And you remember there were protests then, but then they all went away. Now, what do we do here, Pums? I mean, what's the appropriate response? And what is it about the advertising business that it just doesn't seem to get it a lot of the time? And is it as important as on the day that everybody gets upset, like yesterday? Because a week later, no one's upset anymore. And if it was a really important thing, people would still be hanging on, you know?
You know, so every single time something like this happens, and we've seen quite a share of it in South Africa. So we saw it, which was an international thing with Doves, Dove.
Dove, so, yeah.
Dove and Tresemme, by the
That's
way.
Right.
Are both Unilever companies. So what's happening at Unilever is the question we want to have, right?
And they're a big spender in advertising. They should know better.
They're a very big spender. But it's also, it's so many little things. So many people are involved in the chain of approval. And it talks to the lack of diversity, right? On the one side, there's a lack of diversity, and then there's a lack of confidence. I've been in many boardrooms with black executives in both advertising agencies and in the marketing department. And where there is a lack of confidence because of whatever reason, whether it's the culture of a company that people are working for that they're afraid to stand up and say, ooh, I don't agree with this.
Yeah.
Or you've had so many fights. You've had so many fights about so many other little things, that this is just one more fight that you're just like, today I'm just too tired to have this fight. Or it's clickbaiting where any, you know, so miscalculating yet again, whether is the outrage worse than the apology? Is it enough if we get enough people talking about us and then we apologize? And it's also, there are so many different things that could go wrong in a chain like this. There's so many different people involved in it. Like that, so, you know, clicks put out their statement or whatever. That bloody CEO, like the CEO should go. The CMO should go. They should just start afresh, right? Start fresh. We fucked up. We're not the right people. We have a culture here that's wrong. Move on.
But do we, or it's really hard to please certain sectors of the market. I mean, you know.
But it is not hard to get certain things right.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm working with a client right now.
Like you'd really have to work hard to piss off some people, and then other people are like supremely triggered by everything. Is that an advertiser's fault or is it the market's fault? Because why is there such sensitivity?
This particular thing. It was so run of the mill, easy to spot if you were paying attention. This was just, there's no excusing it. There is no way that anybody, even I saw Tulima Donzela's little tweet about unconscious bias and I call bullshit. This is just one of those things that is just so easy to spot, so easy to not fall into this trap. And yet they did.
Yeah.
So there is something fundamentally wrong about the way that they view themselves and us as their market.
Mm.
in that organization.
Sure.
And then, so it starts with Unilever, Trace, and their mini brands, the Tresemmes and all of that, and then goes to a second layer of people at Clicks. So somebody else at Clicks looked at all these things and said, we're good to go. Let's go for it. Yeah, we're going to, you and your crap, crinkly black hair.
Yeah.
Compared to, and I mean, this is such a, I don't know if all of y'all saw the images, but it's such a thing, right? So there are so many images you could use of cracked, damaged, dry hair, and so many images you could use of healthy, well looked after, well nutritioned hair. Mm-hmm. But to compare a black person to a white person and say one is good and one is bad, it's wrong.
Mm.
There's, you know what I'm saying? That's just,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not even about.
I'm not going to argue. That's right.
To say one is good and one is bad, like, this is, it's comparing apples and oranges.
Yeah.
And then, still on the point, but slightly different, can I just bitch about something?
Go ahead.
Can I watch my news and just get the news? I am tired of everyone trying to make a moment and a thought piece about everything. There was one particular news station, we all know it, it's in the country, for all three of its main broadcasters during the day. The main video that they were pushing out, and this was the top piece that all of these three broadcasters started with. My thought on the Clicks debacle, my view on it, just start your bulletin with the news of the day, give it to me as it is, and let's move on. When did we all become so subjective and this is about me? What is news exactly?
Yeah, but that's as a result of the kind of media world that we live in at the moment. And they're looking for clicks. I mean,
excuse the pun.
And by the way, I'll bet you that those three people that you're referring to, I don't know who you mean, but I bet you that they all have the same point of view, which makes it even more boring, is that their point of view is the same. There's no nuance in it at all. They're actually choosing the safest route. They're all going to parrot each other because then they're not going to get into trouble. In other words, they think they're being terribly interesting and countercultural, but actually they're cultural because they're in the mainstream.
Did you watch the TV show Newsroom?
No. Oh, yes, yes, of course. Yeah. I love that.
I think that's what it is. Mm. I think there's everybody wants to be like that anchor,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And have this outrage moment. And then,
I'm with you, Sia. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Give us a rundown there. Give us a rundown. Highlights package, Nyana, for those of us that aren't as... we're not as highly sophisticated as you in what we consume. Give me 5 seconds of...
So it will start with me as the anchor.
My lived experience.
Full camera shot on me. Mm-hmm. There's no other visuals, no top stories, nothing, just me.
Then
a slow zoom pan on me. Good evening. You know, given the time that we're living in the country, I'm just going to call it like it is, South Africa. I am tired of corporations telling us how to feel. Well, let me tell you how to feel instead. This is bullcrap. Excuse me.
No. Oh, my word. I've changed my mind.
Yeah, but that's a moment to shine. I mean...
Yes, you know what? Let your moment... I remember Barbara Walters going out into the Middle East, and she would spend the whole evening trying to catch a dictator for 12 minutes. And in those 12 minutes, she would pierce that dictator with three questions. And that is a moment. I would remember, you know, someone standing on the sidelines of Jackie O as she was getting off Air Force One, still in that bloody two-piece of hers, and they were just asking that one question that would go down in history. Not every single 3 days trying to be a relevant something.
Yeah, there's so much pressure. You're being so unfair because there's so much pressure on these journos. Because you see, they learnt one thing at journalism school, and then they then they were put into the pressure cooker of like, you need clicks, so get out earn your clicks, develop an opinion you don't actually have.
But a great quality about greatness is the fact that you are unique and you go with whatever you feel is important, not what everyone else does.
Yes, but what you're leaving out of this is that you have to be the sort of person who people actually would ask for an opinion from. A lot of these people that you're talking about, no one's asking them. No one's going up to them and saying, hey, I'd really love to know what you think of X, Y, and Z.
You've forgotten social media.
You see it in general life, right? Very few people have ever asked themselves if they're interesting. Like, I've seen how shocked people get when I'm like, I don't go to Bry's and stuff because I'm like, no, you're boring. But I've seen how people respond to being told that. This is boring. I'm walking. Because nobody's ever asked themselves, am I interesting? It's never been a narrative, especially in South Africa. It's like, oh, well, I've got something to say. Naturally, you're going to listen because that's the... No, you're boring. Like, are you interesting first and foremost? Like, Anderson Cooper, love him or hate him, he, by his very nature, has character. So just because you're on TV and you went to journalism school, somebody needs to have an awkward conversation with a lot of people.
Just so you know, I've never asked myself that question either.
Oh, well, I'm not surprised. You're one of many. You're one of many. Hey, I'm trying to tell people this. I have to ask myself sometimes. They say only boring people get bored, and I'm like,
I've listened to our show a couple of times when I've been on one of my rants or whatever, and I've thought, oh, you sound boring. So yeah, I think we need a little introspection. See, most people don't have a show where they can listen to themselves afterwards and realize that they're boring.
Okay, last point, and I know this might tick some people off. On that whole news anchor thing, I am not surprised then for people who are complaining that, you know, President Trump is nothing but a reality TV star in the White House. I'm not surprised at how this ecosystem is fed, because once a news anchor has said something that is so subjective and their view, there were some people who are going, yeah, so-and-so for president. I'm like, no, so-and-so, yes, has had a terrific journalism career, but it's just sitting behind a desk and reading a teleprompter. You know, now how does that qualify them for president? But here we are in 2020.
Our standards are very low though, Sia.
Anyways, that's off. I'm lighter now.
I think we're all over it, but there we go. Right, let's get into some news headlines for the morning and see what
and
else
just
is
the
there.
Headlines. No
commentary.
No commentary please. Just the headlines.
Yeah, I kind of think though that sometimes that's why we have to do these stories, because here's a man who was arrested after killing his wife inside a police station while she was reporting domestic violence. Now, again, I'm going to contrast this with what we've spent a half an hour speaking about. But this is outrageous. This is truly outrageous. This is the kind of thing that would get me on the streets, and I'm not a protester. But this woman was shot dead inside an Eastern Cape police station, allegedly by her husband, while she was reporting the case of domestic violence. The police confirmed on Monday. Police spokesperson Brigadier Temenkwasi Kinana said that the gunman had allegedly attempted to escape after committing the crime, but was chased and arrested by the police. Preliminary reports suggest that the deceased had gone to the police to report domestic violence at her house. While she was busy reporting this to the police officer at the community service center, the husband entered the station and, without saying anything, started shooting the wife, who succumbed to injuries sustained at the scene. You can get upset about an ad about hair, and you're entitled to. I'm not going to take that away from you. It's got nothing to do with me. But if you're not at least a little bit furious, even if you don't take to the protests and you know, say something, do something. I mean, this seems to me to be something that's really worthy of upset. I mean, here's a guy who's committed domestic abuse, and then he goes and shoots his wife in a police station. And all those political parties who are looking for attention, not just the EFF, but all the others too. Let's hear your comments on this one, guys.
So, you know, when I saw this story yesterday, the first thing that came to my mind is the insensitivity with which we deal with stories like this. You know, so before it escalates to he has now shot her dead in front of witnesses who happen to be police, is almost all the time you hear stories of domestic abuse, and at the exact same time you hear a person chirp in, but they should get reported. You should report this to the police. You should leave. You should and then you hear this kind of reality and story. And for a small moment, I think, begin to understand the level of danger some people live with in their home every day.
Yeah.
And how hard it is to break away from that cycle.
Well, I just feel desperately sorry for this woman in this case, and I feel like this story should be on the top of our agenda today. Really should, because we've just come out of Women's Month where a whole lot of lip service was paid to, you know, gender-based violence and blah, blah, blah. Here we have an example, but now we need to know what the hell was happening here, and we need to understand how to stop things like this from happening before the poor woman has to even go and try and report a case of domestic abuse at the police station. But what a horrible illustration of just how fractured our society is. South African National Roads Agency CEO Skumbuzo Makozoma said that the time for debates on e-tolls was over because, with deteriorating roads and poor revenue collection, the country needs to make a decision. I think we've made our decision, Mr. Makozoma. I think we've made it very clear we're not paying. Am I wrong? Anyone want to debate that?
No.
When South Africa was asked to pay, we said no. And a few of the more responsible, law-abiding citizens in the country did what they were expected to do. But most of us said, no, middle finger. We're not. This is another tax that we didn't sign up for.
The country needs to make a decision on what? You finished at the country needs to make a decision?
That's what he said. What? The contentious e-tolling system has been dragging on for more than 6 years. Many motorists refusing to pay or simply unable to fork out the extra cash each
time. Wow, has it been 6 years?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But why is it being called contentious? Because for contention, there needs to be two disagreeing sides.
There are. SANRAL and there's us.
There was never any contention. From the outset, 99% of South Africans said no. So there was only ever one side. Asifuni. That was clear from the beginning. There's no contention. This was bollocks from the beginning. And we saw what you were doing with corruption. So there's no contention here, Chief. Don't use words like contention. Contention needs a bit of disagreement. We were very clear as South Africans from the beginning.
Yeah, but you see, government have been toing and froing on this. So I hear you. Bulelo, you're right. But government, we're waiting for a cabinet decision on what to do about e-tolls. And of course, as usual, they're dragging their feet. So this guy's trying to run a company. Whether they're a company we love or hate is immaterial. But Skumbuzo Makozoma is trying to run SANRAL, which is something no one wants to do, right?
He needs shame was Kumba.
Shame, exactly. He needs some clarity here. He needs cabinet to tell him, okay, go ahead and enforce the law that we're about to promulgate, or that we'll get the legislature to promulgate. And if people don't pay their e-tolls, these are the steps that you can take. Or, because a lot of politicians are also saying scrap this, or they must fall in with the politicians who are saying scrap this, in which case Makozoma doesn't have a job. And he needs to just clear out of there, and we can use that building for the homeless.
It's still funny to me that there's a small I go to with an e-toll store in it. I have never, ever seen, according to Sangweni and Associates, I've never seen a person in that store. Never.
No, but
I've never seen.
But there's someone just operating the store, right?
Yes. And I
know lots of people who got their e-tags diligently, like, loaded. In fact, when that judgment came out about the e-tags and what's going to happen with them, I remember one person that we all know who's very compliant and got a tag from the beginning, asking on Twitter, what's going to happen to all the money I've paid till now?
Shame.
One day I actually One day I actually want to go into that store and ask those people, what are you actually guys, what are you doing?
They're on social media all day.
Shame, man, because I doubt they have an influx of, a huge influx of applications.
Well, let's turn our attention further afield. Nigerian doctors are in state-run hospitals and have begun an indefinite strike on Monday over pay, overcrowded facilities, and a lack of PPE. So in Nigeria at the moment, if you do have COVID or any other disease and you go to a state-run hospital, you're in big trouble. Industrial action by the National Association of Resident Doctors, which represents 40% of doctors in the country, is the latest in a string of stoppages by medics to hit Africa's most populous nation as it struggles to curb the spread of the coronavirus. We've kicked off the strike today, the president said, adding that unlike previous strikes, that's the president of the union, medics treating virus cases will join the action. There will be no exemptions. There are over 40,000 resident doctors in Nigeria's state-run hospitals. They've long complained of a lack of beds and drugs in hospitals, as well as inadequate protective kits. So there are other complications starting to creep in the fight against COVID, especially in Nigeria. ENCA reporting this morning that Saudi Arabia has jailed 8 people over the Khashoggi murder. Remember that Khashoggi murder? Jamal Khashoggi, remember he was killed in the embassy, according to the consulate, the Saudi consulate in Istanbul back in 2018, and he had gone there to obtain some documents for his impending wedding. His body was reportedly dismembered and removed from the building, and his remains have never been found.
Ugh.
The murder caused a global uproar, tarnished the reformist image of Prince Mohammed, the son of King Salman, and the de facto heir of the kingdom. State media reported that 5 people were handed 20-year prison sentences, 1 person was sentenced to 10 years, and 2 people were handed 7-year sentences for the killing. None of the defendants was named, which is very odd. And a Saudi Arabian court jailed 8 people, but we don't know who they are. State media reported this 4 months after his family forgave his killers and enabled death sentences to be set aside. The trial, criticized by a UN official and human rights campaigners who've said the masterminds in the murder remain free. Khashoggi was, of course, a critic of Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who was last seen at that Saudi consulate. And not any word since. Still no remains, still no names of any of the people involved. So it's basically a gangster state. But we knew this about Saudi Arabia. And they seem to be able to get away with it.
So this is a plot out of a twisted movie.
And you know, the only reason we don't, it's not on the front page of every newspaper every day anymore is because it happened in Saudi Arabia.
And people like having cars that move.
Yeah, but I mean, at the moment, there's less demand for oil than there's been for a very long time. And the price is low. And Saudi Arabia is not the center of the oil universe anymore. There's oil being discovered in the place that I just mentioned in the story before, Nigeria. There's fracking going on in America, which is now oil independent, energy independent. So, you know, the tables are turning. Anyway, if this was a story from France or from Britain or even here in South Africa, it would be a much bigger story. But if you're in a place like Saudi Arabia, it just gets pushed to the side. So it's interesting that. And just one other thing, while we're in the headlines, just one last story. The Boeing plane, remember there was that investigation around the 787 Dreamliner when they grounded them in August last year after they discovered 2 issues that stemmed from their manufacture? Well, apparently, after Boeing notified airlines in late August of manufacturing issues with some of its 787 Dreamliner aircraft stemming from quality control issues during production, 8 planes, that's this year, not last year, have been grounded as a result. And now they are stepping up their investigation into potential defects in the aircraft's program production. Now, this is all happening while no one's flying, so it's not as big a deal as before. Remember that they did this before and it was a massive story and they weren't allowed to fly any of these planes until they'd investigated properly. Well, there's more problems with the Dreamliner, so Boeing have got some splaining to do.
Oh, damn.
I don't know about you, but I'm not flying anytime soon anyway, so I hope they sort this out in the meantime.
Yeah, have all the issues you want in the world.
Yeah, right
fix
now.
Fix it to your heart's content. Actually, take the next month to fix it.
Yeah, exactly.
With pleasure.
Oh, man.
Fix your shit.
Absolutely. All right, very good. Those are the headlines this morning. There's lots of other stuff that we need to get into this morning. Sia has got one thing he wants to talk about. If you want,
I'm dying to hear about this one, Sia.
Sia wants to tell us how much money you need to earn to be in the top 1% in South Africa.
Ooh.
The top 1% in our country, how much do you have to earn? Is it millions and millions?
Yes, a couple of millions.
Okay, tell us how much in a year. How much do you have to earn?
2.8 million rands for annual pre-tax income. That's how much you need to earn in South Africa before you are in the top 1%. Anyone close to that?
No, not I.
Okay, all right.
Not in this group.
Okay.
They're nuts.
Yeah,
that,
this
and
is,
it actually that doesn't. There are many people, so we like our top 1% is made up of many, 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 many people.
And more so worryingly, a lot of politicians.
Yeah, this is up from 2.21 million. That was in 2019, but in 2020, if you can earn up to 2.8 million rands a year, then you're in the 1%.
But let me just point out that is not a lot of money in terms of how much you could make in other countries, you know, in order to be in the top 1%. It's really that's not a huge amount of money.
We're not
talking 20 bedroom mansions and a fleet of Bentleys. And we're not talking overseas trips every 5 minutes. And we're not talking about, you know, gold encrusted everything in your house. We're talking about fairly okay, upwardly very, very satisfactory, but quite middle class people. I mean, that's not 2.8 million is a lot of money, sure, but it's not a fortune. And that's our top 1%. Yeah. That shows you how impoverished the rest of the country is.
So your take-home pay, because that's the before-tax number, hey, Sia?
Yeah.
It is about 140,000 rand a month.
Yeah.
You did that calculation.
Yeah, she did
that
quickly.
That was impressive. Yeah.
And I'm just checking.
I'm still trying to divide by 12 and then minus 40% and whatever. Well, okay, let's compare South Africa to the rest of the world, right? Mm-hmm. So if you take 2.8 million rands, let's just talk in US dollars because that will make everything a little easier. So 2.8 million rands would be about 188,000 US dollars. And so comparing that to the world, to be in the top 1% in India, you have to earn 77,000 US dollars a year. In China, you'd need to earn 107,000 US dollars. Brazil, 176,000. Italy, 169,000. Then we come in with 188,000. Canada just makes the 200K mark with 201,000. France, to be in their top 1%, 221,000. Australia, 246,000. The UK, 248,000. Germany, 277,000. Then the US really bumps it up with 488,000. Singapore, 722,000.
What?
Wow, mm-hmm. Singapore's that's huge.
And then
tell us who the leader is.
The leader is the UAE with 922,000.
We were just talking about them being a gangster state.
922,000 US dollars.
That's a lot of money.
But see, I want to know about the calculation that arrives at the 1%. Do you know what that is? So how do they decide?
So this was a collective investigation done by Bloomberg, the World Inequality Database, KPMG's Worldwide Tax Data, and Knight Frank Wealth Report. So they looked at professionals to billionaires.
We played the Knight Frank interview that we did last year yesterday. Yeah, so you can listen to that if you want to hear how they compile it, Pums, because Knight Frank are the people who actually put these surveys together and figure out who the 1% are. But that would be a very quantitative thing. So take the whole population of the country. They obviously have people who earn zero at one end, and they have the richest people at the other end, and then they figure out what the percentile, you know, what the degrees are between the people in between. And then they figure out, okay, well, those are the 1%. You know, you need to in order to be in the 1%, this is how much you need to have.
Mm. And then it's sad to bring this up, that in most of the world, and this is also according to what the study reveals, that our taxes are used as a leveler in all of this. France, Australia, China, the UK, and South Africa all have a top marginal tax rate of more than 40%. Mm-hmm. And this is what politicians try to use to make things equal. But ooh, when that comes out of your pocket, mm-mm.
Yeah, then you've got to accept that you work like all of us in this country do. We work for government for X number of months of the year.
Yeah, so Brazil and Singapore are taxed between 20 and 30%.
Yeah.
Canada, India, the US are taxed between 30 and 40%. Switzerland is right on the 40% mark, and then the rest are over 40%. Well, that's UK, South Africa, France, China, and Australia.
So as you know, one of my favorite pastimes is watching watching the day's proceedings.
Parliament?
No. But Judge Zondo, you know this.
Okay.
I am still one of the few people that are still riveted by the goings on the days of Zondo's life. They rivet me immensely.
Sure. That poor man.
About a week and a half ago, there was a gentleman on there whose last name is Nzegu. I forgot his first name.
Mm-hmm.
And last week, we were all enraged and shocked at the fact that Nomvula Mokonyane has friends who are willing, this, y'all, my friends, who are willing to put 2.2 million rand down as a deposit so she can get a 3 million rand Aston Martin.
Yes.
Right? But Nzeku, guys, Nzeku was astounding. As they were talking to him about all of the monies he's purportedly received, right? And he says, what? This money came into my account. 1.5 million rand paid to me. Mm. Yeah, that's nice.
And so also, not just that, but out there
in that 1%, there are people who can have 1.5 million rand land into their bank accounts and it not cause a blip. I mean, who among you would get a 1.5 million rand deposit into your account that wouldn't make you go, hey, what's going on here?
Right. Something suspicious. And remember, they also threw her a surprise birthday party, which cost quite a lot of money. And she had no idea who paid for it.
And she didn't even ask who paid for it. She was just like, these are the kinds of friends I have.
Yeah,
man.
And then also, let's remember what Phil said last week from Divot Motors, who said there are people who are buying G-Wagons.
Cash.
What did he say? 20 people a month around the country?
Cash. They're not financing these G-Wagons.
Mm-hmm.
So what's our population in South Africa? 55 million? 60
million? About 60 million.
60. Okay, here we go with more calculations. What's 1% of 60 million?
Oh, my goodness.
Well,
10% of 60 million is 600,000.
Ah,
okay. So there's 600,000 people in the country who are earning 2.8 million rands.
And up.
A year.
And as Bulelo says, a lot of those people are on fat state salaries. Mm. You know, there's quite a lot of them who are taking that money straight out of the tax revenue. In other words, they're not contributing to it. They're actually taking away from it. Anyway, I just think it's interesting because the whole point of life is to be as unequal to everyone as possible. So well done to the 1%. I'm not resentful about the fact that you're there, even if you are there in some government position. You've managed to get there. Congratulations. Frankly, you're smarter than the rest of us. And if you can If you could take home that much money, good for you.
It also makes me sad. Like, 2.1 million rand isn't buying you a great life.
Yeah, I know.
Like, it's buying you a decent living.
Sure.
Like, you can send, if you have two kids, you can send them to, a private school. Mm-hmm. You're stretching it and you're having to drive probably the lowest range car you're going to have to drive and live in a decent area.
Yeah.
In
other words, you're not flying high, you know.
No, you're not living. You're not living. Yeah. You're not going skiing twice a year.
That's why I'm saying those people deserve it, and I have no problem with it. All these inequality indices, all these Gini coefficient studies are like, so what? Obviously, people are going to earn different amounts of money. Why are you surprised by that? I'm always like amused by the fact that there are some people who genuinely believe that we should all be earning exactly the same amount of money, despite the fact that I'm not a neurosurgeon and that takes a huge amount of effort and work and understanding and probably more intelligence than I could muster. So if a neurosurgeon's earning more than me, then good for him.
But, you know, interesting, Bulelo, that you bring up the fact that that does not buy you a great life.
Mm.
For a while now, I've been trying to kind of reconcile why this has happened. Why is it that 30 years ago, my parents could have jobs that I don't believe my parents earned more than what I earned. So the two of them together,
mm-hmm.
and had three kids, had two cars, mm-hmm. had a home. We had a good life, right? And 40, 50 years ago, most families had one income because most women didn't work.
That's right.
Had three kids, had a house, how is it possible that we earn so much more today than ever before? And yet the world we live in, the life we are able to afford, is not equal or better.
It is better. Much better.
Is it better?
So, yeah, we're taking for granted the fact that we have different forms of transport than they had in those days, and that now you can get any information you need on this phone. And look, the phone costs 25,000 rand if you're looking at the upper end, but the kinds of things that we have these days are more expensive. You think about running water and electricity in every house, and obviously that's what we're aiming for. But absolutely our lives are better, and it does cost more because that's inflation. That's what starts to happen. But generally, the poorest person in the world today is probably a lot better off than the poorest person in the world 100 years ago in every way.
We'll come back to that. Okay. I think that's a rather superficial view of it, but I get the gist of what you're saying. For me though, the interesting thing is that I think South Africa is quite unique. I don't want to really talk about other countries. Is we're doing so much catching up here rather than flourishing. You know, in somewhere like the global north is more compounding on probably 400 or 500 years of empire.
I mean, Pumi, this is a good example to counter your argument for a second. I mean, did your parents have a microwave?
Yes.
A fridge?
Yes.
Okay. Did their parents? Obviously not. You know, so all of us, my grandparents didn't have fridges and microwaves, but my parents did. So your life is made much easier by those kinds of things.
But my point being that so did they have a TV? Did they have electricity? Did they have all of those things? Remain in place. I have those things too, but I am saying I have one child and it is a everyday kind. I have to think about and not do certain things so that I can give my child a similar life to the life that I had. So even as I then bump it up to say, so yeah, it's 2020 and that was 1990, but what my parents had and what I have is definitely miles apart, but the lifestyle hasn't changed much.
Well, then that would be a thing to celebrate.
Is it?
I don't know. I think so. I mean,
you would have expected to be further.
Absolutely.
Okay, but I didn't go to a private school, but if I had kids now, I'd have to send them to a private school. And I would need medical aid where before I might have sent them to the local hospital. I mean, you know, I don't know that we went to, you know, if I had a problem, then, and luckily, I suppose children don't go to hospital unless there is a major problem as much as old people do. But, you know, you can't rely on the state for the hospitals, for the schools, for a lot of the things that I suppose we could when we were kids. I don't know. I mean, I don't have all the answers on this one, but I think that invariably there is more to pay for because we have more stuff. We have more things that we need, more things that we want. You know, the reality is like the luxuries of the 1970s, 80s, and 90s can't compare with the luxuries of today. There's no comparison. Today is just obviously a much better time to be alive in. And if you have to pay for the privilege of being alive now, and you have to
Prada loafers instead of Cavellas.
maybe.
The secret is first marriage for money, people. I've always said it, and I'll keep spreading the gospel. Your first marriage for money. Get divorced within 2 years.
One of the 600,000 people in the top 1%.
Yeah. Go and get the people.
Come on over.
We know where they live. Go and get your first divorce.
Meet those people. Patron. All right. We gotta end the first hour today, and we'll get on with the show in a minute, and we've got lots more to talk about. But there's another interesting piece of information. 600,000 odd people in this country are in the top 1%, and
why are you still single?
It's not frightening money. It's not like, wow, that's amazing. I could live anywhere in the world. I could do anything I wanted. I could go anywhere. I don't have to work. That's not that kind of money. It's still pretty average. So you might be in the top 1% and not even realize it. That's something to be grateful for. CliffCentral.com